Ramah in Arachayim Simon Tuf Tzadi Dalad Sif Gimel writes, V'noyegin l'shtoyach asavim b'shvois, that the minig is to spread out grasses, plants, herbs, greenery on Shavuos, bebatei haknesiyos v'abatim, to do it in shuls and to do it in the house. Why? Why is this minig? Zecher l'simchas matan Torah, and this is a zecher, it's in commemoration, in memory of the Simcha of Matan Torah. There was a Simcha of Matan Torah, there's Shavuos, and for some reason, because of the Simcha of Matan Torah, we put plants around, we put flowers, and that's the Minhag Yisrael. Mishnah Berurah explains this. What does Matan Torah have to do with grass, with greenery? Shehayu shama savim saviv Har Sinai. Because there was grass around Har Sinai. Surrounding Har Sinai was grass. How do you know that? Kidachsiv, hatzain va'abakar al yeru. That during the time of Matan Torah, and in advance of the Matan Torah, we had an isser of going near the mountain. Not only human beings are not supposed to go near the mountain as long as there is the Matan Torah is about to begin and is taking place, but also gam hatzayin va'abakar al yiru. The tzayin and the bakar also should not go and graze in that area surrounding the mountain, a certain amount of space around the mountain. And what do we see from that pasuk? If animals would be tempted to go and graze in that area, presumably there must be grass in that area. And if there's grass in that area, so that means that we have to put grass in our houses, we have to put plants and flowers in our shuls, in our homes, because there must have been grass growing around the mountain by Har Sinai, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu warned us not to go near it, and also the tzayin and the bakar should not go near it. The question that I have on this Ramah, on this Mishnah Berurah, is that it doesn't say that there was flowers and grass on top of Har Sinai. If it would say that by Shas Matan Torah, you know, on Har Sinai itself, while we were getting the Torah, suddenly there were beautiful flowers growing on the mountain. Okay, Mela, I understand, that's a nice minig. What in the world does the fact that there was grass growing around the mountainside, not on the mountain itself, around the mountain, because there were grass growing around the mountain, near the mountain, so for that reason, we have to celebrate that reality by putting grass around in our shuls, in our homes. It wasn't, what's Shaykh is that up to Matan Torah? Matan Torah took place on Har Sinai. There was some grass that animals might be grazing by around it. That's nice. I mean, that's interesting, I guess. It's a desert. I guess it's not a place that's naturally, that there should be naturally any greenery growing. But there was greenery growing, but it doesn't say it was on the mountain. So why is it so important to recognize the fact that there was grass growing around the mountain, and because of that we celebrate, and in the shuls and in our homes we put all this greenery because of the grass surrounding the mountain that the animals were not going to touch because there was a border that was erected around the mountain. A very strange minhag l'chayra. And I think that the answer to this question lies in a very deep understanding of what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure to have boundaries around the mountain. No people, as long as there was going to be Matan Torah, you were not allowed to go anywhere near the mountain. They cordoned off, not just going on the mountain, but even going near the mountain. They didn't want anyone in the vicinity of the mountain. As long as there was going to be Matan Torah, Shloish Ezek Me'agbalah, there were 3 days of Hagbalah, which means that there was this was set up these walls, these boundaries were set up to protect people from going near the mountain already 3 days before Shavuos. And that's why already we're in the airspace come 3 days before Shavuos. Shavuos Me'agbalah is already a different dinim in halacha about about simcha and even people that keep the second sfira like myself. Shloshim Me'agbalah, you could shave, you could take haircuts, you could listen to it. It's already a different, already has a din of Shavuos. So, what's the site of this? Is it just an interesting historical fact that we were separated from the mountain for our protection for 3 days? And I think that the answer is it's a lot deeper than that. We wouldn't make a whole big deal about Shloshim Me'agbalah if that's just happened in history and it's not relevant to us today. The importance of Hagbalah is that very often in life, if we're not careful, we somehow have a temptation, and sometimes we succeed, Rahman al-Itzlan, in touching the mountain, in being pageya in the mountain, in being pageya in the Torah itself. And what I mean to say is that a lot of times people might have an axe to grind against the Torah, or a rabbonim, or rabbeim. And because of that, they sometimes could go and make fun of a rabbi, make fun of Torah, make fun of Chachmei Yisrael, or any Indian in the Torah itself. I'm just thinking there's a story, I think, with Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger's daughter got engaged, and they were eating breakfast together, I think the story goes, and there was eggs, and then there was something else, he made a joke, this son-in-law, this future son-in-law, about an egg. An egg in Yiddish is I. So he said that I'm eating the egg before I'm eating the other thing because va'ai mikadem. The egg is mikadem, comes first. It was a joke. It was, I don't think it was a great joke, but it was, that's what passed for humor then. But all right, it's an attempt at humor at least. Nothing, right? It doesn't sound too bad. The story goes Rabbi Akiva Eiger broke the shidduch because of that joke. You don't tamper with the Torah. You don't make a joke about anything to do with it. You take a pasuk in Chumash and you make a joke out of it. That's not for my daughter. I'm sorry. You might be a nice guy. You might be funny. You might be a Talmud Chacham. You're not for my daughter. I don't want... You can't make jokes. You can't touch the Torah. You don't have the ability to touch the Torah. You have to keep your distance because you need a certain awe and a reverence and a fear of going anywhere near the Torah. You can't just assume that, I'm boys with a Torah, so I could make jokes with a Torah, and I could make jokes about a Rebbe, and I could, and I could make fun of this Gadol and the way he looks and the way he acts. And you have to be very careful. You have to be very, very careful about going anywhere near the Torah, the Chachamel, the Laimdeha. And if you don't, it's a very, very dangerous consequence. The Chazal tell us that Hizaru Migachalosan, a person has to be afraid of the coals, of the heat, of the fire of a Talmud Chacham. And when we sometimes take liberties about what we speak about in any realm of Torah, it has consequences. I've said many times, but I'll say it again. I always tell this to my family, a story that took place not too long ago, that there was a girl in seminary, and she was making fun of the appearance of Reb Baruch Ber. Reb Baruch Ber has a beautiful face, one of the most magnificent hadrasponims that I've ever seen. And people that saw Reb Baruch Ber, in real life, attest to the fact that he literally looked like an angel. I think they say a story that when Rabbi Baruch Ber came to America, so he was presented by the mayor of New York City with a key to New York. I don't know if they still do that. It was like an honor that was given to very chashuva visitors, not just in New York, but in other cities as well. I once was by Rav Meisha's grandson's house, and he showed me that when he went to Baltimore, Rav Meisha, years ago, they presented him with a beautiful key to the city of Baltimore. So it was when Rav Baruch Ber visited America, he was in New York, I think it was Mayor Walker, if I'm not mistaken, he presented him with the key to the city. And he said, Rabbi Leibowitz disproves Darwinism. Rabbi Leibowitz, if you see a face and a human being like Rabbi Kiveger, like Rabbi Baruch Ber rather, it's not possible to believe that we come from apes. It's just not possible. He was such an angelic-looking human being. So with that as a preface to the story, this girl, I don't know what she saw funny about it, but she was making fun of Rav Baruch Ber's appearance. And within the hour, her face became totally paralyzed. Totally paralyzed, Bell's palsy, whatever it was. She suddenly, she couldn't move any of her muscles in her face. And, you didn't need to run to a makubal to chap the reason why this was happening to her. I mean, within the hour, she had spoken badly about Rav Baruch Ber. And she called her father. Her father was in America. And her father was obviously very concerned. And so he said, okay, I think he spoke to his Rav. His Rav said, you have to fly with your daughter to the kever of Rav Baruch Ber and Rav Steinman maybe said to go to Rav Baruch Ber's kever and ask Mechila, and then hopefully everything will be good. The only problem was, they just said, great, okay, where is he buried? They didn't know where he was buried. Rav Baruch Ber was buried during the war years, and or maybe right before the war was a Bahala. They didn't have a chance to really put up a proper matseva. They knew about where he was buried near his parents in a beis ilum, but they didn't know exactly where he was buried, and that's the problem. They needed to know. So, a long story short, there's an organization that. Does, I think it's called Oilei Tzadikim, they basically, they fix Kivrei Tzadikim. So throughout Europe, if there's a grave of a tzadik that needs repair and needs tending to, so they take care of it. They've built a lot of the oihels throughout Europe by the Hasidish Rebbes, and they're, a lot of times Rebbes are buried in the middle of some field in some, funny city, and they pay to have like a mausoleum erected around it to protect it, and Hasidim could go in, there's a key. They've done this to many, many Kivrei Tzadikim, and they called them, could you help us locate where the burial plot of Rav Baruch Ber is? The story goes that they used some infrared technology, maybe drones, I don't know what they were doing, it was a while back, I don't think they had drones yet, but they were able to somehow go through the cemetery and see that there was a kever that was lying perpendicular between the rows of the gravestones. There was one body that was very perpendicular, and they had a mesira and Rav Baruch Ber's mishpacha that he was taka buried perpendicular to the other kvarim, and they set up a tombstone and a nice matseva there, and they davened there, and then shortly thereafter her face went completely back to normal. And I always tell my family, just be very careful. Don't ever, ever make fun of Gedolei Yisrael. Don't make fun of Gedolei Yisrael. Don't make fun of Rabbanim. It's you're playing with fire. What do you need it for? It's funny? It's not funny. Stop. And don't make fun of Torah. If there's a Pasuk in Chumash, don't make fun of the Abbas and the Imais and all these jokes that, silly jokes about this and about that and Matan Tayrad. There's always people that are making it. Don't laugh. Don't make a joke. It's something that this is the nearest and dearest thing that we have in our life, the Torah. And because of that, we have to make sure to protect ourselves against tampering with the Torah, against touching, as it were, the Torah. If you look in the Rambam, The Rambam is in Hilchas Me'ila, Perakhes Halacha Ches. He writes as follows: Ra'oi la'adam l'espainin b'mishpatei ha'tera k'deisha. It's worthy for a person to think about the laws of the Torah, the Holy Torah. V'leida seif in yan k'vikoich, and to try to delve into the topics of the Torah, the halachas of the Torah, the sugis of the Torah, to the degree that you can. V'davar shlo yimatze le'tam, v'lo yeda le'ila, and something that doesn't seem to make sense to you, right? Sometimes we hear people, that halacha makes no sense. This mitzvah makes no sense. If you say that something makes no sense, or you have a machlekes between Rashi and Taisus, I understand Rashi, but Taisus makes zero sense. You speak like that? Al yeh kal be'enav. Don't be so easygoing. It shouldn't be an easy thing in your eyes to just make light of something that you don't understand of the Torah. And then the lashon of the Rambam is val yehares lalos el Hashem pen yifreitz bay. Pasuk from these parashas about hagbalah, and don't destroy. Don't like in your rush to go to the mountain of Hashem. Don't trespass. Pen yifreitz bay, because you might come to trample upon the mountain itself. Don't compare Torah with Divrei Chayil. You think just like by Divrei Chayil, you know, you don't necessarily something that you read. You don't like something in philosophy or in literature or in, I don't know, science. Something doesn't like ring true to you. And so you can make light of that. You don't like it, fine. Go to your teacher, raise your hand, say, you know, I don't like this about the story. I don't like that about the story. This doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Fine. Torah is not that way. Torah is something that we have to be very careful not to go near the mountain. Don't have the audacity to go near the mountain, to go too near, because you might come to trample on the Torah, and that would be a devastating event. If a person would go and try to, in any way, be pagim in the covet of Torah, that would be devastating. And this is the Rambam using this lashon from these psukim by Matan Torah, that don't allow yourself to make light of anything in the Torah, because by doing so you might go and enter into that area around Matan Torah and trample upon it, and that would be met with very severe consequences. There's a letter that was written by the Chafetz Chaim. If you want to look at it, it's in my book, Great Jewish Letters, on page 172, 173. But there was a Jewish medical conference scheduled to convene in Vienna. And part of its agenda was to discuss ways to impose certain mandatory regulations upon the yeshivas, such as a reduced number of students in each yeshiva, as well as cutting back of the daily hours of Torah study. In other words, doctors, professors were gathering at a convention in Vienna, and they were discussing, Jewish doctors, and they were discussing different things in general about medicine, I assume. And one of the things, one of the parts of the program was yeshivas. And they were going to try to enact certain guidelines for yeshivas to stick by. You know, that you know, you shouldn't be learning so late at night, you shouldn't be learning too much, you shouldn't overdo it, you should have you know, you shouldn't have too many students in every yeshiva, maybe the diet of the bachur, whatever. And I presume they meant well. They didn't mean to, you know, to interfere with the sidrei yeshiva, what they were learning in the yeshiva, but they were speaking about yeshivas as if like they were in charge of that matter of the yeshiva, and they were going to try to, I don't know, speak to the government about it. I don't know what their plans were, but they were touching on things that were really almost not there, although they might have been well intended, but they were intruding a little bit on the territory of the Rosh Yeshivas. And this matter came to the attention of the Chafetz Chaim, and when he heard about it, he immediately wrote the following letter to the chairman of the conference. His name was Dr. Schwade. And this is what he wrote. It's a short letter. He says, to my esteemed friend, the wise Dr. Tzemach Shwade, I was told of the medical conference soon to take place, which you will be heading. My best wishes go out to you. May the healer of his nation infirm, of his nation's infirm, bestow his heavenly assistance and blessings upon you. It is my understanding that the condition of the yeshivas is of great interest to you. I hereby report that, thank God, the state of the yeshivas is good and sound. The students are receiving all their needs. Meals are being served to them 3 times a day. For 2 hours a day, they are free to keep fit. The boys are all healthy. I am certain that you will be most pleased by this information. And from your friend who respects you and honors you in accordance with your exalted status, Yisrael Meir HaKayin. That was the letter. But that's not the end of the letter. Here's the P.S. He writes, P.S., I would like to remind your honor of the verse in the Torah. Whoever touches the mountain upon which the Torah was to be given shall surely die. Kalanegeya Bahar Mais Yumas. Whoever touches Har Sinai is going to die. You have to, after the Torah was given and the signal was sounded, then you could go back to touching the mountain, to grazing. But as long as the Torah is being given, whoever goes and touches the mountain will die. If the danger facing one who touches the mountain is such, how much more so if one dares to touch the Torah itself? If touching the mountain on which the Torah is given is so grave, imagine touching the Torah itself. Imagine the consequence of touching the Torah itself. Chavetz Chaim obviously was giving a warning to this Dr. Shwade. And again, it seems like he was mechabed him, and he was mechabed him. But there are times that you have to be very careful not to encroach upon the reshus of the Torah, not to encroach upon the covet of Torah or the authority of Rabbanim or Rosh Yeshivas to enact certain things and to not undermine them. So many times there are things that the G'dayli Yisrael say, you know, that we're not supposed to do. And it's one thing if, you know, we do it, but it's another thing to flagrantly make fun of them. You know, if G'dayli Yisrael, sometimes there were periods in Klal Yisrael, for instance, that G'dayli Yisrael tried to institute takanas at weddings, and they'd be Yehuda. And sometimes they were strong enough to be able to do that. They could tell I think the Neid Yehuda in Prague writes exactly how many people you can invite to a chasna, what you could serve at every course, how much, and what time it should start, what time it should end. He made real takanas. And in Prague, I assume they respected it. But then in later years, some places had that power to make takana, some places didn't. You know, G'dayli Yisrael, a few, 15, 20 years ago, I remember the Novominsky Rebbe and maybe others tried to reimpose takanas. And it didn't take. You go to weddings and they're as opulent as ever. I thought during COVID we got a little, you know, ha'aris about like how you don't need to make fancy weddings and you can get married with just 2 eidim in a backyard and, you know, it's all so good. But we didn't learn our lesson and we're back to where we were before, maybe even more opulent. Okay, you want to do that, that's one thing. I'm not saying if it's good or bad or whether the takana was really meant for every tzibur, but don't make fun of the takanas. Understand that they mean it for our good, and don't undermine them. Don't, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. They're not going to say, you know, don't, if you speak like that, then that's touching, that's not only touching the mountain, it's touching Torah. Our job in life is not to be one of these balabatim in a shul that sit and start defaming Chachmei Yisrael, the Torah, making fun of Psukim, the people in this room, I know that I don't even have to speak about that. It goes without saying that that's not what we're going to be. But it's good to know, because sometimes we're with other people and they have that attitude and they're, you know, undermining the Chachmei Yisrael, the Torah Kedoshah, and the halachas of the Torah, and they're making light of it. It's only a drabbanan, and it's this, and they didn't understand that, and this tshuva is wrong because they didn't understand the science shabbat, you know, and the agadita is, you know, in the Gemara is, you know, if they would only know real science, they wouldn't, you know. So basically, you know, people start pecking away. Starts with agadita, then it goes to halacha, then it goes to rabbis, then it goes to, you know, to yeshiva bachim, it goes to kail yungalai davrechem, and then before you know it, we're like thick into the destruction of the Torah, Rachman al-Litzlan. And that is a terrible, terrible thing for anybody, but certainly for Bnei Torah, who should know better. And I believe that this is perhaps the Minig Yisrael to have grasses, to have greenery, to have flowers in the shuls. Some shuls really, you know, we have some flowers in the front. If you ever see Breuers in Washington Heights, they take pride in this. You could probably find it online. They adorn the whole shul from one end to the other with flowers like across the top of the Ezra's Nashim. And wherever you look, there's flowers. It's beautiful. Why do they do that? What's this minig? Where did it develop from? Well, the Mishnah Berurah says because there was grass that was growing around the mountain. It says, Gamatsayma Bakar al Yiru Mulaharahu, don't allow your animals to graze. And we asked, so that's nice, but it has nothing to do with Mount Taira. What does that have to do with the fact that there were grazing areas around the mountain? How does that affect us? Why that for that? That's why I have to spend all this money on buying flowers for Shavuos? And I think the pshat is that area where the animals would be grazing, were it not for the hagbala around it, is very, very critical to the entire event of Matan Torah. It's not a sidebar of Matan Torah. It's not, okay, you know, Matan Torah took place on the mountain. There happened to be some area around the mountain that was, we put some police barricades around there to make sure nobody would come. That's not the aside. It's not police barricades to make sure people don't come to the mountain. It's much deeper than that. And it affects us till today that we have to erect barricades for ourselves and for our friends and for our families to make sure that nobody gets near the mountain. That if ever we're even tempted to speak against Gedolei Yisrael, we stop ourselves. There's a Hagbalah. There's 3 days of Hagbalah before Mount Torah in preparation for the Torah. And during those 3 days, we're supposed to understand that there's restrictions when it comes to the Torah. It's not just, okay, this is great, I love the Torah, I love learning Torah, and it comes without any restriction. There's no instruction manual with the Torah. No, there is an instruction manual. The instruction manual is in the form of the Shlosh Magbala. 3 days before, and understand you can't get nearer the mountain. That's the mussar of the 3 days before Matan Torah. There's Hagbala. You have to restrict yourself. You have to restrain yourself. Don't come near the mountain. Don't put your dais into the Torah. Don't joke about the Torah. Don't undermine the Torah. Don't make fun of the Torah or Gedolei Yisrael, the way they look, the way they act, the way they walk, the way they talk. Don't do it. It's not worth it. And it's against what the Torah is saying. You have to put around that. And that grass on the ground that we have to stop, the animals wanted to go to that grass. Stop them. That grass is a major part of Shavuos. Not the grass on top of Matan Torah. I don't know if there was greenery on Matan Torah. I think there may be Midrashim that there was, you know, grass did grow on Matan Torah, flowers grew on Matan Torah. I never found that Medrash. I once asked my Rebbe, who knows Kol Torah Kula, where that Medrash is. He said, I never heard the Medrash before in my life. Maybe it's an American, you know, I don't know. Maybe it could be that it does exist. I just remember in Yeshiva, we used to always learn that, you know, Matan Torah sprouted. Har Sinai sprouted grass, flowers. If you find the Medrash, it'll be great. He knew everything, and he said, I never heard that Medrash before, so I was a little surprised. But that's not why we put grass. That's not what the Mishnah Berurah says. We put grass because we want to celebrate that there was grass around Har Sinai that we didn't allow the animals to go to. That grass is what we put throughout our shuls, what we put into our homes, as if to teach a lesson to our families and to ourselves that these flowers, this grass, this greenery represents to us the ability of what we're not allowed to do with the Torah. As beautiful as the Torah is, We're not supposed to trample on the Torah. We can't trample, don't, like there's a sign, don't walk on the grass. Don't trample on the grass of Torah. Don't go anywhere near the grass of Torah. The Rambam uses Lashon. The Rambam says, Valyeras lalas al Hashem pen yifreitz bay. And the Mishnah Berurah, and the Chavetz Chaim says, Kolanegeya v'Torah atzmai, like Holshagen. You touch the Torah itself, you're in for its trouble. It's not the hardest thing in the world to do, but it's something we have to remember to do, and especially when we're around people that are doing it, sometimes it's important to make a macha. If you feel that people are infringing on the covet of Torah, don't laugh. Don't go for it. Don't just continue. Stop. Make a macha. Say, I don't, you know, you're trampling on my Torah. You know, Rav Gifter has a beautiful vart on Zmiris. It says, Kasheshanim Suga, that the Shabbos is surrounded by a hedge of roses. It's, I think, in Lisanig B'Sanugim, and that Zemer of Shabbos says, Kasheshanim Suga, it's surrounded by a hedge of roses, a Lashon from Shir HaShirim. And Rav Gifter says like this, he says, what does that mean, that Shabbos is surrounded by a hedge of roses? He says, what is a hedge of roses? A hedge of roses is, it's like a bush of roses, and let's say it surrounds my backyard. Let's say I put a hedge of roses around my backyard. So it's all around, beautiful in my backyard. Now, does it stop somebody from walking through my backyard? Not really. It's low enough that a person could really just walk on top of the roses and come into my backyard. Who is it stopping? It's stopping somebody that has an appreciation for roses. If you understand the beauty and the preciousness of a rose, I'm not going to step on a rose bush. They're too chush of a rose. I might step on on regular weeds or grass or some free growing type of bush, but I'm not going to step on a rose because I know that roses are inherently chashuv. You know, you go to the store, they could be, you know, many dollars each. He says that Shabbos is the same thing. Shabbos is something that, is there something that's physically stopping me from being Mechal Shabbos? No. If I want, I could light up a cigarette on Shabbos and smoke, Chas V'Shalom. I could do that. Nothing's stopping me physically. Why is a person not, because it's Kasheshanim Suga, they understand the beauty of Shabbos. And because they understand the beauty of Shabbos, they don't dare do anything to violate Shabbos. They don't want to trample on the beauty of Shabbos. The grasses that we have in our homes and in the shuls are supposed to remind us, those beautiful flowers and vegetations remind us that the Torah is so chashuv and it's so beautiful that we can't trample on it. We have to make sure to enjoy it, appreciate it, but don't touch it. Don't walk on it. Don't step on it. We have to erect barricades around the Torah for ourselves, for our families, for Talmidim to understand that this is the Torah. We don't go near it. We embrace it, but we can't interfere with it. We can't cheapen it. We can't make fun of it. We're living in times that are very rife with, right now as we speak, it's Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, but, you know, they're debating in the Supreme Court about, you know, Bachrim, you know, the draft, and leaving yeshivas, closing down, stopping funding for yeshivas, and, you know, it's a very heated discussion. This was a debate. It didn't start this year. It didn't start last year. It started, you know, really from the early years of the Medina, but throughout. There was always a tension in Eretz Yisrael about yeshiva bachrim, you know, versus the chayalim, and why are they entitled to learn and not the chayalim. Well, it's obviously a very hot-button issue. And regardless of the politics, regardless of what you might think personally, but you hear a lot of people saying, you know, they should go. Let them all go to the army talk. It's not fair. You have people weighing in that have no ability to, you don't understand. Not you. The people don't understand. The people that are so quick to judge and to say, you know, whatever they're saying, whatever negative things they're saying about the Rosh Yeshivas and about the Gedolim and about the Avreichim and why they get to serve in the army. You hear it all the time. I mean, I do. And I don't get out very often. I'm in yeshiva most of my life. But the few times that I tiptoe out of the Beis Medrash, you hear people talking this way. And that's a very good example of don't touch the Torah. The Gedolei Yisrael, you might not understand what the Cheshbon is. You might not, you might wish that maybe there would be more parity and maybe, everybody should serve and they should find compromises. Whatever your hashkafas are, we're not discussing that. We are discussing the fact that Gedolei Yisrael, whether it's Rav Shach or whether it's Rav Steinemann or whether it's the current Gedolei Yisrael, the Chazon Ish, this is what they felt. You don't like it? Too bad. It's not for you to negotiate. You're not sitting and negotiating. If you're the Chazon Ish, you could start and saying, what you feel you could do, what you can't do. But for us to go and state our opinion and say, I think they should, who are you? What do you mean? I think? Who am I? I have a shita about what Gedolei Yisrael are saying. I can argue with the greatest of Gedolei Yisrael people that are sitting learning Torah Lishma for 80, 90, 100 years. I'm supposed to come and weigh in on something that they're saying? Who am I? Who am I? And this is one of a million examples of how sometimes we tend to encroach upon the Rishus of Torah. These are issues that are these are things that, in our world, an Eilam Ma'asi, it seems like, well, the soldiers are doing everything, and these guys are sitting in Kailo and air conditioning, and they're this, and they're that, we don't know. If we'd have tire glasses, maybe we'd see the whole world differently. Maybe our view would be completely different. Our perspective would understand that those guys learning in the Beis Medrash with Amelos, with Yegia, with Avas Hatayr, with Yerushamayim, they're the ones that are winning the battle. I'm not saying such a big chiddush. Chazal say this. In many places, Chazal say this. So, we have to believe it. We have to just now believe it. But to get that understanding of, well, I don't know, we have to think of it. You're not entitled to an opinion. When it comes to things that are related to Torah and those that learn Torah and the future of Torah, the destiny of Torah, it's not something that I can have a say. If I start saying that's basically me going and going across the Hagbalah line, the line of demarcation, and walking into Har Sinai while it's boiling hot and I'm about to touch it, and somebody's saying, "Don't touch the mountain; it's a hot mountain." I say, "No, it's fine." Boom. Al Yerusu. Don't trample on the Torah. The Torah is ours to enjoy and to respect and to appreciate and to give over to others, to our children, to our grandchildren. The Torah is a Messiah. The Torah is Kedusha. The Torah is Torah. The Torah keeps the world going. It's not ours in any which way to affect, to touch in a negative way. And this is, I believe, the site of Shosh Magbala. This is the Minig Yisrael to put all of these beautiful plants and flowers in our shuls and our homes to remind us, don't trample on it. Don't walk on these precious, on this precious gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us on Shavuos called the Torah Kadesh. We should all be Zeicha, Mirtz Hashem, to have a good Chodesh, Shabbos, and a wonderful Yantiv. We should be Zeicha, Lekabel, Es HaTorah Ba'avo, Ubi Yira. Have a good Shabbos.